Welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just finished a three-game set against the Colorado Rockies, losing two games out of three, one of them in quite horrific fashion. They now stand at 54-47 on the season, and they currently occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. And just up front, a little bit of a disclaimer here. This is going to be a little bit of a different show. Usually we do a breakdown of the series. We give our top five or bottom five, but obviously there is bigger news to attend to. Alex Cora has signed an extension with the Red Sox, so this show is going to be completely dedicated to Alex Cora, breaking down the extension, how we feel about it, how we feel about the future of the team, given that news that came through today, instead of breaking down the 20-7 football massacre that happened in game three. We figured you guys would rather hear that. So this show will be all about Alex Cora. So before we get into that, let me introduce my co-host. First, from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
I'm wonderful, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. Obviously, interesting day for Red Sox Nation. Interesting week. Little bit of breaking news coming in at the end there. And then, obviously, a disaster of a game. But, you know, can't complain otherwise. And, Nick, where can folks find you on Twitter?
Just at N Diamond Media. So N Diamond, like the stone media. And that's my name on Twitter.
Awesome. And also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Doing very well. I've got the next, 4 or 5 days off from work. So that's pretty good. And today took an interesting turn, I would say. Didn't think we would have a Cora extension. There wasn't really any, you know, rumors prior to today. It just kind of popped up. And, you know, when Jeff Passan and any of the ESPN people are on it, you know it's probably legit and fairly imminent. So, it all unfolded over the next few hours. I can be found at Cushman MLB. The podcast account is at Bastards_Boston. My Facebook account, Terry Talks Sox. Find us on Instagram. And more importantly than all, we're getting very active on our Substack blog. So search for Bastards of Boston Substack and you can see our in-print content. We usually post maybe 2-3 times a week. It's not every day, but busy enough. So we just did a full panel. All five of us weighed in on James Paxton. We're actually going to be doing a show on that. Normally that show would drop on Friday, but we're going to drop it at noon on Thursday just because this is a very unique week of the year. Things seem to happen fast and furious, so no need to delay any of that.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Obviously, trade deadline is right around the corner, so that's kind of been our main focus for a little bit is a trade deadline, and then all of a sudden we get hit in the face with this Alex Cora news today, and it was interesting how it all came about because Passan, a couple hours before the game, had the tweet saying that they were working on an extension and that they were close, that they were pretty close to reaching that. And then I think it was, right at first pitch, I feel like was John Heyman who was the first to tweet that it's official and, they've agreed and, they just got to file the paperwork. So it kind of came together pretty quickly. As Terry mentioned, there really wasn't a ton of rumors about it. In fact, if anything, all the conversation that we had heard was that everyone's saying, yeah, Cora's gone. And we had been saying that on this show. Shaughnessy had been saying that. Like, Maz had been saying, everyone was like, yeah, he's walking. That's just all signs pointed to that. He came in as a lame duck manager. We talked about that in the offseason, how that very rarely happens. And usually it leads to the manager walking at the end of the year. Obviously, things were a little bit different. Red Sox have been, I think, overperforming in a good way this year. All of a sudden now, Alex Cora signed a three-year extension. The exact money was $21.75 million. So he's making just over $7 million a year. So Still less than Craig Counsell, which I find interesting, but it's still this, I think it's the second highest paid manager now that he is in baseball. So I guess, Nick, I'll start with you in terms of when you look at the extension, the money, the years, and the manager himself, Alex Cora, like, how do you feel about it? Because obviously you're kind of new to the crew here. So, I'm not sure how you feel about Alex Cora. Terry and I have talked about it, but give us your take on how you feel after hearing that news today.
So if you asked me about 3 days ago, if there was what percentage chance Alex Cora would be back as the 2025 Red Sox manager, I would have said zero. And if I didn't say zero, I would have said like 0.5% chance. I thought before today, there was a 0% chance Alex Cora would not be the manager of the 2025 Red Sox. And I also thought there'd be a chance he would not be the manager of the 2024 Red Sox by the time September or October hit. I thought there was a chance that the Red Sox didn't make the playoffs and Alex Cora would have a job lined up before the World Series was over. That's how sought after I thought Alex Cora would be in the open market. So I am very, very, very surprised that the Red Sox and Alex Cora came to a agreement here under Craig Counsell. So I thought at least it would be Craig Counsell numbers. I thought he'd get the $8 to $9 million a year. Maybe not the 5 years because he's expressed in his he doesn't want to be a manager forever. He wants to take care of his family and then spend time with his kids. So the 3 years doesn't really surprise me, but the money, it does. I thought it'd be more, and I'm very surprised, but I'm also happy that they got this deal done with because there's no one out there who's better than Alex Cora at this moment. I mean, in 2018, I was very happy Alex Cora came in to replace Farrell. In 2020, when he was fired, I didn't want him back because I thought it was a bad look to bring back a manager who was accused of cheating and not only accused, was proven to probably cheat. I thought it was a bad idea, but he came back in 2021, brought this bad team, a bad team, in my opinion, to the playoffs. So I respected him again. 2022, it didn't happen. And then 2023, I kind of was over him. But in 2024, he's won me back. And I think it was a very, very, very great move to bring him back because at this point, there's no one out there who's better than him. So I'm glad the Red Sox ownership decided to pay him. And if you asked me in 2023 when they're looking for a new GM, if there's one person, player, executive in the Red Sox organization that they trust, it is Alex Cora, and they don't trust anyone more. They don't trust Craig Breslow. They might not even trust Theo Epstein more than Alex Cora at this moment. So I really do – I'm very happy that Alex Cora is back for at least the next 3 years.
Terry, how do you feel about it?
So in recent weeks on this podcast, I had kind of pivoted. Prior to that pivot, I was kind of looking forward to a fresh voice, you know, a fresh mind coming into that position. But the more Breslow seems to flounder here, and in the next show, we're going to cover this a lot. I mean, we're getting a lot of mixed signals as far as what could happen between now and I think, is it Tuesday the 30th? So I don't know that Breslow really knows how to do it. And how do you, at this point, how do you bring somebody else in? How is the next person, who's probably going to be someone that's very unproven, going to fill the shoes of Alex Cora and command the respect of this locker room? Like, this locker room next year would still be Alex Cora's locker room, even if he was managing the Dodgers. How do you sell that? How do you look at the media with a straight face and either tell them, A, you didn't want Cora back and that you felt this new guy was the best guy for the job, or B, Cora wasn't worth the money, and that's why we have, you know, manager B. They had no play here. In terms of integrity, they had to bring Alex Cora back. And there's a lot of things simultaneously happening. Suddenly, Aaron Boone's status doesn't look good. There's a lot of people, and they're calling for his firing, and that happens every year, but it seems to be especially intense this year. That would have been a great landing spot. And you know, Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman, assuming he keeps his job, they would make Alex Cora the record highest manager. That would happen. The Dodgers job could have came open. I was skeptical about him going there. And you could also have a David Ross situation where his job looked completely safe last year. And he didn't even get fired for several weeks into the season. Once Craig Counsell became available, they fired David Ross out of nowhere to be able to hire Craig Counsell. That could have happened with another club with Alex Cora. Brandon Hyde is doing great things with the Orioles right now. Who's to say they wouldn't jump at the chance to get Alex Cora? I think those factors, especially the Yankees one in particular, I think that put a lot of pressure on Breslow to perhaps try to get some talks going here. And as far as the deal itself, I'm a little surprised it isn't a record deal. And not only is it not a record deal, he's not the highest paid annually. Craig Counsell did a lot of good things with that Brewers team. He made them competitive. He seemed to handle pitching staffs really well. He managed the bullpen really well. He is a very good manager, but he doesn't have a ring. So I don't know why. You know, you could say, I'm going to hand it over to Nick here in a second, but Cora has expressed not wanting to manage forever, so perhaps that was it, but I'd still give him the contract and then let him decide in year three or four if he wants to walk away and simply leave that money on the table. But go ahead, Nick.
So I 100% agree with you. I thought the contract would be more than Craig Counsell's, but Craig Counsell did win a ring as a player in 1997 with the Marlins. So I do count Alex Cora's 2007 ring. So we were talking about our little blog post on the Substack today. I was a little like brainstorming, and I did write that Alex Cora was a three-time World Series champion. So I just wanted to mention that Craig Counsell was a one-time World Series champion in 1997. So I do think Alex Cora is worthy of being the highest paid manager of all time, but the cheating scandal in Houston does come into it. Like you said, how he doesn't want to manage forever. So he might only want to manage for 3 years and then go take care of his kids once they get to high school age. That might be a thing. So that might be totally fine with him just being like, I want 3 years and I'm over with it, you know?
I also wonder if part of the reason why he didn't make, you know, record money like Counsell did is because maybe he wants more say and more power than Counsell does. And maybe the reason the Cubs gave him that deal is because they said, well, you're just there to manage the team. We're going to run everything else. But yeah, we'll give you the money you want to run the team. I think Cora wants a lot of input with the front office. And I think he has a lot of input with the front office. So I think they looked at it and said, well, we're not going to give you a record deal because it's different in your case. You know, you're running the team, but you're also, you want input, you want power. So you have to sacrifice a little bit of money if you want that influence, because normally that doesn't happen. I'm not saying that is the case. That's just kind of my speculation. It is funny though, because I hadn't thought about the Cora and the manager situation at all, especially heading into this week, because we're closing on the deadline so fast. And I'm sitting there going, I'm thinking about all these trade scenarios. I'm monitoring what Baltimore is doing. Like, I feel like they're going to trade for Scooball any minute now. So I hadn't thought about the manager situation. And out of nowhere, our old friend Zach actually DM me and he said, hey, you know, looks like Cora's walking. I heard Gabe Kapler is going to be available. Do you want him as manager? I was like, no, I don't want that. and I started thinking, I was like, who do I want? And because he asked me, he's like, oh, well, who'd you want rather than Kapler? I was like, I don't know. I mean, Sam Fold will probably be out there. I don't know if I trust Sam Fold yet. I don't think he's ready. And I started, okay, well, who's going to get fired? I don't want Boone. I don't want Roberts. I don't want Schneider from the Orioles or from the Blue Jays, excuse me. I don't want Showalter if it comes to that. I don't want Marmol. I'm like, yeah, these guys all suck. And I started thinking outside the box. I'm like, all right, well, maybe if the Rays get stupid and they blame their season on Kevin Cash and they make him the fall guy, do I want him? And I started thinking, I think I'd still rather want Cora because I think Cash would just, you know, he would just pivot full analytics. And I don't think that he has the same feel for managing players on a personal level that Cora does. So the more I thought about it, I was like, man, it's going to suck when he leaves because like the options aren't going to be great. And then all of a sudden, 2 days later, he gets an extension. So I've always been slightly pro Cora, but I've never been all the way. Like, I think he's the best manager in baseball. There might be a better option out there. I just don't know who it is. That's my issue. Is like, you look at the best teams in baseball, Yankees, Dodgers, both their managers stand to be fired. You know, the Braves, Snicker, I think is okay, but I think it's more, he's just got a ton of talent. I do like what Brandon Hyde's doing in Baltimore, but he's got the same thing. He's loaded with talent. That's kind of an easy job. And that was sort of my one thing, my criticism of Cora is that everyone says, well, 2018, he won the World Series. Yeah, look at that team. It was stacked. They were loaded. So the only team that had a chance against him was the Dodgers, and they made him look like a joke. So it's one of those things where I'm still not like, I'm not singing Cora's praises from the mountaintop because I agree with what Nick said. 2023, I was ready for him to leave. After that season, I'm like, this guy is checked out. He's done. He knows he's leaving. He's got one foot out the door. He's not motivating the players anymore. Like, let's go. Get rid of him. But then you look at this year, it's like, oof, Duran has turned into a monster. You know, everything's kind of, the pitching staff's turning it around. Devers is still doing his thing. Like, there's certain guys on that team and in that clubhouse that I think you can label as those are Alex Cora guys. And I would worry about a new voice coming in and trying to talk to them. Like, I would worry about another manager trying to manage Jaron Duran. Because I think Duran is 100% a Cora guy. I think that a big part of his turnaround has been Alex Cora. Just believing in him, keeping him in the leadoff spot, not letting him take a day off. Just say, yep, you want to keep playing? You want an Iron Man streak? Go for it. Which we never saw with Bogarts, Betts, JD Martinez. Because I think Cora thought those guys were a little bit soft. And I think he looks at guys like Duran and he's like, no, this guy's not soft. He's a ball player. He's like a speedier Dustin Pedroia playing the outfield. Like he's that kind of like dirt dog, just let me stay out there, that kind of thing. I think Devers is a big Cora guy. I think Cora really connects with him. I think, you know, Nick Pivetta, who we don't know what his status is going to be a week from now, but I think he's a Cora guy. So I think there's a lot of guys on that team that they respect Alex Cora and they really look up to him. And, you know, like Terry said, it's his clubhouse. And that's the thing. Like if he were to leave after this season, if you bring in Sam Fold to manage those guys next year, he's not getting through to them. Sam Fold's going to try and talk to Jaron Duran. Jaron Duran has already had a better career than Sam Fold ever had in like 2 years. So Jaron Duran is going to look at him and go, why am I listening to you? You sucked. Like, it's not like Cora wasn't a Hall of Famer either, but Cora at least has the respect of, hey, I went to a World Series. I won it. I've been managing for a couple of years. So I just think it's a good extension because it's only 3 years. It gives Cora a chance to look at what the Red Sox do in that 3-year window, especially with Breslow being new, because we keep hearing about the big three. Just wait till the big three are ready. Just wait till Mayer and Teal and all those guys come up. And I think Cora signing 3 years, he said, okay, let's see. Because within those 3 years, they should all be up and they should all be winning games for me. And if they're not, and you're still not spending money and you're being tepid at the deadline, then I'm out of here. It's only 3 years. I can leave again. I'm still young. No problem. So he didn't sign a 7-year extension. He didn't sign a 5-year extension. He signed for 3. So I think that's him saying, yeah, I'll stay because we're winning games and I like the players we have and I think we can get better. But you've got to prove to me that we're here to win. If we're not here to win and we're just here to win prospect rankings, I'm out of here. I'll take the Yankees job in 3 years, or I'll take the Mets or whatever. I'll take some other big market and I'll go win there. So I think the 3 years is a big deal, because if they don't prove to him and they don't prove to the fan base that they care about winning again, then Cora's gone and you're going to have Mr. No Name trying to run this team and it's not going to work as well.
Do you want to go, Nick, or you want me to go?
I'll say something. So I think my main question is if
you got some static. Why don't I go? You can figure that out. I think something came unplugged on you. You're good now.
Yeah, if Chaim Bloom was still in charge, would Alex Cora still be the manager of this baseball team? In my opinion, I'd say no. I do think Craig Breslow has identified that Alex Cora is a World Series champion with the Red Sox, a 2-time World Series champion with the Red Sox. And he has said, this guy is good for this organization, and total ownership, hey, I'm willing to invest in him. I don't think Chaim Bloom would have ever have done that. I think he would have gone towards the Sam Fold route or someone else, because I don't think Sam Fold is still available, because I do think he will be the Dombrowski replacement in Philadelphia. But I do think he'd go towards more of an analytical manager instead of a Alex Cora or someone like that. So I do give Breslow slight credit for that, picking a player manager who played, who won a World Series just like him. So that's where I give Breslow a slight edge over like a Bloom type of guy.
So Jason pointed out something that was really important, and I just want to echo it. Keeping Cora is a step away from hardcore analytics. You're not committing to that. And I've never believed in that. I think the manager should be the smartest guy in the organization as far as the on-field stuff. And so that's the one thing. And if a Brandon Gomes guy came in and he was going to be the new executive, 1,000%, I probably would have wanted a new manager. Because he would have identified someone. I just think it could have worked that way. With Breslow, I just don't trust him with anything. So like I said earlier, Alex Cora coming back is the safe move here. And while Alex Cora doesn't, you know, where he's not, I'm struggling with how I want to articulate this. Basically, he doesn't piss me off every day. that's important. Maybe once a week, once every other week, I might get annoyed with something, but it's not a continual thing. I'm not constantly questioning who's coming out of the bullpen. I'm like, okay, that's a good move. So I can live with that. That's never been a theme with Cora, and I think at times he hasn't pushed his players hard enough. I think for some reason he's more comfortable pushing the kids harder than he has the veterans. I don't think there was ever a point where he confronted JD Martinez and said, look, this, and this needs to happen. I don't think that ever took place. I think in 2018, to some degree, the inmates were kind of running the asylum a little bit. Chris Sale was allowed to be a maniac. David Price was going off on his, you know, escapades. So now that it's a younger team, you know, perhaps maybe that's a big part of it. And in years past, I mean, I think we might have underachieved. Let's not forget here. I mean, we've only gone to the postseason twice with Cora, so not all his fault. I mean, he hasn't had a ton of pitching to work with, but But I'm just glad there's no elephant in the room anymore. We can start focusing on other things. A couple of things I just want to bring up here. One thing that would have been interesting is the whole Netflix thing is going on, and we don't know how that's going to come out. Maybe it's going to be the most epic thing ever, and it's going to be awesome. I don't know. You know, it could be a basic docuseries, or it could be as epic as 4 days in October were with that 30 for 30. I don't know how we're going to feel about it. But we did see some footage of Alex Cora informing certain players that they were going to the All-Star game. Jaren Duran, Tanner Houck, there must have been one more in there. Kenley, maybe. And, you know, it happened in the clubhouse. Everybody was kind of huddled around. And you could it was a moment where you could see his leadership kind of shine. Like, they were all sitting there very intently listening to their manager, you know, talk about the three that were going to the All-Star team. So if there's a lot more of those scenes in there that are going to come out that we're not aware of, and Alex Cora ends up looking like this Vince Lombardi type leader on Netflix, and then they don't bring him back, it's just more egg on their face. So that's one thing. And the one thing we haven't really discussed here is the timing. Even though it was unexpected, the timing is a little curious, because we could be having a different conversation after the deadline here if it doesn't go well and Alex Cora is not happy with the performance of Craig Breslow. I'm surprised he signed early, because he could have waited till after the deadline as a way to put pressure on Breslow. Listen, and the list is growing. I mean, we need a reliever now. We weren't saying that a month ago. We were not worried at all about this bullpen till they all started getting hurt. But you need a starting pitcher, you need a reliever, you need at least one right-handed bat. Give it a couple of days, we might need something else. But he could have used the trade deadline perhaps as leverage, and it doesn't seem to have played a factor here. He just seems to be happy that the deal got done. And he cited family. They're comfortable here. They know Boston. But I don't know. I still feel, in spite of all that, winning has to be, it has to be close. It has to, winning in the very near future has to be a goal if I'm Alex Cora, but who knows if that really mattered.
So I do think winning is important. I think what may have happened is, you know, we kind of mocked Breslow for saying it at the time, you know, when he was doing that interview up in the Monster, when they had the Monster seats in Nesson, and they asked him about the trade deadline. He said, well, we're still doing our analysis. We're still analyzing the roster, trying to figure out what exactly, which lane we're going to pick, all that stuff, right? What if in the last couple of days they finished their analysis and he came to Alex Cora and said, look, here's the list of guys I'm willing to trade, and here are my targets, and, you know, here's what I'm willing to do. And what if he sort of laid out a plan for the deadline that he showed to Alex Cora and said, look, you know, we can put these deals on the table and I think it'll work. And that's sort of what pushed him to say, okay, you know what? You're not just hoarding everybody. You're going to actually trade prospects for major league help. I'm going to get help in the bullpen. I'm going to get a right-handed bat. Okay. Yeah, I'll sign. Maybe it was something like that. That seems a little dramatic for it to all come together like that, but it could be that they've been trying to negotiate with Cora all year. And he said, look, I have no idea what you guys are doing. Like, you guys are buying 1 minute, you're selling the next. So I need to know, am I managing a development team or am I managing a playoff team? Because that's annoying to have to deal with that. So I need to know that, like, you guys care about winning, because if your whole plan is just keep developing until 2026 when the big three are up, then I'm out of here. I'm not doing that. I'm not having a 70-win season back-to-back again, because then my name becomes dirt. So I think Cora was kind of putting pressure on them all year, saying, look, you've got to pick the right lane here. And I'll get these guys fired up. I'll get them to win games. But you've got to help out the roster. And I just wonder if finally Breslow went through all of his spreadsheets and talked to everyone he needed to talk to and said, yeah, you know what? We're willing to trade Nick York for a starter. Or, you know, we're willing to trade, I don't know, Nazan Zanatello or one of our 18,000 shortstops for a late inning reliever to help you in the late innings. And Cora went, okay, good. If that's the plan, let's drop the papers. Let's do it. Because if you're willing to do that, then fine, I'll stay. So I just wonder if that's partially what happened. I do think winning is important to Cora. I don't think he would have signed if Breslow told him, yeah, Kenley, O'Neill, Pivetta, they're all gone next week. Cora would have been like, okay, then peace. I'm out in October 1st. See you later. So I think that's partially maybe what happened.
I'm not sold that some of those guys don't get moved here, but literally this, I think early afternoon, it was at least an hour or two before the Cora news came out, there were some tweets, and it might have came from Heyman, that the Red Sox aren't ruling out a trade of Kenley or Pivetta. And I'm not going to give my take on this because I'll be giving it in the next show. But what I was going to tweet out is, no way is Alex Cora on board with this. There's just no way he's going to be okay with that happening. And there's a slight possibility. We'll talk about James Paxton too. Who's to say he's not going to replace Pivetta here? And so it ends up trading Pivetta ends up being a lateral move from the, so that's those were my thoughts, and I'm glad I didn't tweet it. It would have been one of my all time poorly timed tweets, because Alex Cora gets an extension a few hours later, right before the game happens. So, I just thought that was interesting, and I'm glad it's over with, and and you know, it's not at the forefront anymore.
Yeah, I'm glad that the drama and the black cloud of that is no longer hanging over the team, especially with a very important week coming up and a very important second half. Nick, do you have any other final thoughts before we wrap there?
So I don't think it's a coincidence that Alex Cora signed the same day that Craig Breslow came out and said that they're going to look to improve to the 2024 team. So in an Alex Spearer put out in a Boston Globe article that Craig Breslow is dedicated to improving the 2024 team. But in the same article, he said he wasn't sold on not selling a Nick Pivetta, a Kenley Jansen, or a Tyler O'Neill. So I do think the fact that he said, I'm looking to improve the 2024 team, influenced Cora to taking the $7 to $8 million deal, which put him up there with the Craig Counsell deal. I also don't think that Breslow is 100% sold on only buying. I do think he will look to add players, but I don't think he will shy away from a great deal if he was offered one. So if somebody offers him a great prospect for Tyler O'Neill, he 100% pulls that trigger. And I think that will piss off an Alex Cora. So there are two ways to look at it, kind of. But I do think he would not have signed it if Breslow didn't put out that quote that he would be looking to upgrade. But he also said he would be okay with taking a deal that he is going to upgrade the team in 2025 with like a Tyler O'Neill trade or a Nick Pivetta trade.
Actually, I did mean to give this in my last take here. Before Breslow was hired, I mean, all we were hearing was so-and-so refuses to interview. This candidate's not interested. Alex Cora's name was floated as a potential GM type guy. And I want to say we all universally said, nope, don't want that. Don't want the science project that will come with that. It's not the right time. You know, we're trying to win after so many years of losing. But at this point, it wouldn't have been great, but I almost wonder, would that have been better than the Breslow hiring? Because that's a science project too. So I'm just saying, like, he's a smart guy, and who knows?
Here's what I'll say about that. Not to cross sports, but I would not hate if they followed sort of what the Celtics did, where if in 3 years Breslow is not cutting it at GM and Cora says, hey, give me a shot, bump me upstairs, and they sort of do that kind of thing. Cora gets elevated to GM and they bring in whoever Cora wants to be the new manager. I'm not opposed to that kind of thing. Now, that's obviously way down the line. You know, I'm not saying we're firing Breslow today, but let's see how he does at the deadline. Let's see how he does this coming off season. But if in a couple of years he's no different than Bloom and he's, you know, he's too gun shy the deadline and he doesn't really do anything in the off season, and, you know, Cora says, hey, you know, give me like a little bit of a raise and bump me upstairs, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. Because again, if no one else wants the job at this point, which I think we saw that this past off season, then why not just take the internal guy and give him a shot? It worked beautifully for the Celtics. No one thought that Brad Stevens, who's been a coach his whole life, could have been a good GM. And they just won the championship. So, you know, and obviously he's got help around him. He's got advisors, whatever. Cora would too. So I'm not opposed to that kind of transition of power, but let's give it time. You know, I think Breslow, this is a big test for him. And obviously, you know, right now I think he's doing okay, you know, but he really hasn't done much. It's kind of hard to judge. It's a very small scale, but you know, might be a different conversation next week. Next week, I might be coming on this podcast saying, I wish they had never hired Breslow. And, you know, I might be agreeing with you. Or I might be saying, why would we ever want to fire Breslow? He nailed the deadline. We have no idea. So it's all going to change in a week. And it's all going to change in a couple months when the offseason rolls around. So I think at the very least, you've got a good situation in place. You've got a good manager who has control of the clubhouse. He's got the players on his side. And you've got a GM who I think is about to be tested, but hopefully is ready for it. And ownership is doing their usual thing. They're asleep on their yacht. But, you know, for the most part, you've got a pretty good structure here. So hopefully it works. It just, you know, it's all going to change pretty soon, which is kind of scary. So, and actually, speaking of that trade deadline, lucky for you guys, we do have an entirely different show dedicated to that. That'll be coming out for your Thursday commute. So keep an eye out for that. We'll be talking all sorts of trade scenarios. You know, James Paxton, we'll talk about him. We'll talk about even what some of the competitors will be doing. Is Baltimore going to pull the trigger for Tariq Skubal? Stuff like that. A lot of rumors flying around. So we got a whole nother show coming up, just entirely dedicated to the trade deadline. So if you're hoping for more of that, sit tight. It's coming out for your Thursday commute. So we will wrap up this episode here. Everyone have a great weekend, and we will talk to you later. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.